Legislators are in Juneau facing the same budget deficit as last session. There have been cuts to state programs, state jobs, and even a veto by the governor of half of the permanent fund dividend. But the state's fiscal house is still not in order, and Alaska is in a recession. What do lawmakers intend to do to fix it, and how will they find consensus that eluded them last session? In the mix of proposals, what will the public agree to? We'll find out today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Today, Senate President Fairbanks Republican Pete Kelly and House Speaker Dillingham Democrat Bryce Edgemont join us from KTOO in Juneau. Last week, we heard from Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott about what they hope to accomplish in this session. Now we'll hear from leaders in both chambers and from both sides of the aisle. Welcome.
Glad to be here, Lori. This is Pete.
Yes, thank you, Lori. As a regular listener of the program, it's a real pleasure to be on this morning.
All right. Thank you both for being available. I know it's a busy time down there. Alaskans, you too can join our conversation if you have questions or suggestions for helping the state stabilize its finances for the future. You can call statewide 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email talk@alaskapublic.org. As I mentioned in the open, Alaska is in a recession. The Alaska Dispatch noted over the weekend the state lost 9,000 jobs in the third quarter of 2016. We've got more people leaving the state than arriving, and a lot of those disappeared jobs were higher wage positions in the oil and gas sector. That impacts other support jobs. Gentlemen, this is not good news. Senator Kelly, against this backdrop, does it make your job wrangling a budget easier or harder?
Well, I think the thing that we have to consider is that the recession isn't necessarily a result of a loss to come to a conclusion on a fiscal plan. I think ultimately that will exacerbate the problems, but clearly the biggest problem that we have are the crashing oil prices. As far as making our job easier or more difficult, I would say in some respects it's a little easier because we have some tough decisions to make. People see that we have a clear and present danger in front of us, which is a recession. We've been through about a year of one, and it looks like we might enter another one. People have a lot more buy-in at this point. So it might actually make the job a little bit easier.
And Representative Edgemont, is passing a scaled back budget made easier by a recession because people are fearful about the future, as Senator Kelly said, a clear and present danger, and may be more willing to compromise, or made worse because there's less financial wiggle room with each passing day?
Well, clearly there's a sense of urgency this session that wasn't there last session. And I think all legislators, certainly the Walker administration, we're hearing from the business community and others that are coming down to Juneau on a regular basis, I think we all agree that we need to take decisive action this session. And the coalition that I'm involved in, we have put together a comprehensive plan that's going to look at all the elements, everything from targeted reductions to the budget to looking at new revenues, possibly the earnings reserve from the permanent fund, and taking a closer look at the oil tax credits, which we think are unsustainable. So you put all that together in an environment where there are a lot of Alaskans are getting nervous that the economy is retrenching, that things are shrinking across the state, maybe at a moderate pace at this point. But I think it does create an environment where we all know we need to get something done.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. And our guests today are Senate President Pete Kelly and House Speaker Bryce Edgman. They are on the line from KTOO in Juneau. The number to call statewide is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Speaker Edgman, you mentioned a plan, and I want to ask more about that, but let's just kind of get some basics out. Senator Kelly, it's still early in the session, but what are the must-haves for Republicans, and what can you give some ground on?
Well, I don't claim to speak for all Republicans. I do represent many in the Senate. We do have a Democrat in our organization, and that's
sure.
Senator Hoffman from Bethel. And you know, the must-haves are mostly what we don't want to have. We want a plan. Speaker Edgman and I agree on that. We don't have very much argument on the fact that we're going to get out of here with something that fixes the fiscal problem. Our position is a little different than what seems to be developing in the House, and there will be a lot of hearings in the House before they come to a final conclusion, so I don't want to get too critical, or neither do I want to get too excited about what they're coming up with now, because it's a long way before we'll know what that's going to be. But that being said, the Senate is more willing to go down the path of a restructuring of the permanent fund, something that stabilizes the payout and pays at or above the average of a dividend. That'll give us money to fund the remaining government. Given that there are some cuts in government, we do have to have some cuts ongoing. The Senate's has been pretty clear on that. That's our desire. And last year we passed a bill, actually it was SB 128. Frankly, it was the solution to the problem. We wouldn't be having this conversation right now. We'd be talking about more mundane things, about what's going in the capital budget or what's happening in the operating budget. We passed SB 128, which did that. It restructured the dividend. It paid, I believe, at or above the average dividend over the past few years, many years. And it essentially gave us an 88% fix, maybe 85 to 88% fix, and in keeping with the kind of the Super Bowl week, I would do the end zone dance if we had an 88% fix, and just using the earnings reserve and making the dividend a stabilized payout would give us an 88% fix. And so I'm happy with that. When you start talking about income taxes and multiple taxes and changes to our oil tax regime, what's happening there is you're violating one of the Senate principles, which is we have to protect the private sector, because the recession really is in the private sector. And loss of jobs in the private sectors, that's where wealth is created. And if you start taxing the private sector in a recession, you're just going to get less economic activity and more layoffs. And clearly, that's not in the best interest of the state.
All right. Thank you, Senator Kelly. Representative Edgman, the same question for you. What are Democrats adamant about, and what are they willing to negotiate?
Well, as we just talked about, a fiscal plan has to be in place before we can call it a successful session. And our coalition is formed around the notion that we are going to make the tough choices. We're going to lead wherever necessary to put a plan forward. And we're going to look at all elements of putting a plan forward. You know, when you look at the budget itself, just to cut alone, we think that is not only not feasible, but we think that that would be, very harmful to the economy as a whole. And when you start breaking the budget down, education services alone comprise about 44% of the budget, and that's K through 12, university, things like Avtech, Mount Edgecombe, and so on and so forth. And then when you look at other essential services like health, life, safety, criminal justice elements, that's about another 44%. So to actually cut the budget just singularly is, we think, very difficult and really not a pathway forward. So outside of the fiscal challenge that is in front of us, and that the House, at least my caucus, is devoted to tackling, there's going to be other policy measures that are going to come forward. I think we're going to take a close look at Senate Bill 91 and maybe doing a fix to some of those elements. The cost of health care continues to rise. I think there's other elements and a number of our committees that are going to come forward as priorities before the session is over.
And Representative Edgemon, it's been reported that House Democrats may introduce legislation this week. You've been talking a little bit about that, that would seek changes to the oil tax structure and subsidies. This may be coming from House Resources. There also could be a bill coming from House Finance seeking changes to the permanent fund and maybe looking for more revenue. I'm sure that you don't want to steal the thunder of what's being developed right now, but what can you talk about? Is this happening and what would it look like?
Well, first let me say that our coalition is comprised of 17 Democrats, 3 Republicans, and 2 Independents. So I know it's easy to label us as House Democrats, but the fact is, we are a bipartisan coalition, and I want to be very clear about that. Yes, we do have a bill on oil tax credits coming out later on this week. Actually slated for tomorrow, and more details be put forward at that point. The underlying purpose of that bill is just to recognize that oil tax credits, the program that we have in place, is unsustainable. If we look at numbers, if we left it unchecked or left it the way it is today, we'd be looking at about $900 million at the end of the upcoming fiscal year, July of 2018. Or if you look forward some 8 or 9 years down the road, in FY26, it'd be up to $1.6 billion in oil tax credits. Now, as easily as that is put out there, I think both Senator Kelly and I and many others would recognize that the oil industry is very important to the economic fortunes of the state. And so we need to find a balance to keep things competitive in the oil patch and to make sure that we're doing everything we can to continue further exploration and development. So it's a weighty issue, and we're going to take it on with legislation that's coming in a couple days. And, we invite all Alaskans to be part of the debate.
Laurie, let me jump in on that. Couple things. Bryce has said that
I'm in
complete agreement with, and that is that cuts won't do it alone, and that isn't part of the Senate plan. We are going to look at another revenue source, and I kind of described that at this point. Regarding the credits, I think it's important that people realize that $900 million is not a new bill that we have to pay. That's an accumulation of bills that the governor failed to pay. And he had the money to pay it pay those credits at the time and then didn't. And so what we're really looking at this year is about $300 million. So that continues to accumulate because he doesn't pay the bill. There's no reason why we can't discuss credits. There may be some elegant answers to the credit issue. Probably long term, they are not sustainable. I think the last thing to keep in mind is that oil taxes on the an oil tax change at this time is pretty tough to stomach when we've seen so many layoffs in the oil industry. We've changed that tax regime a number of times over the past few years. And it's interesting that I think most Alaskans don't recognize that the credits that we're dealing with now, most of those came from a previous tax regime. PPT, I think, was some of the credits are due to the PPT tax regime that was passed around 2005 and 2006. And then ACES was particularly problematic and created huge tax credits. Those were all dealt with in SB 21. Most of them were dealt with in SB 21. And we're actually on a declining path for oil credits at this time. That doesn't mean we don't need to address them and see if we can't do better. But oil tax credits are going down quite dramatically because of the oil tax regime that we have in place, which most people know as SB 21. But again, I'd say it's probably worth looking at.
Well, it sounds like, I know that the two of you are probably sitting right next to each other, but this does sound like there's a tension point there. I do want to get to the phones in a moment, but Senator Kelly, when you're talking about, you were discussing earlier that the private sector is suffering job losses, that's where the economy comes from. You were quoted as saying critics of the tax policy are living in bizarro world. What did you mean by that? That it just can't be tinkered with again? Or
No. What I was saying is just what I said just a moment ago. The very people that criticize the tax credits and say that we need to change SB 21 are the very people that voted for and put in place ACEs, which created the tax credits that are so problematic. And they fail to recognize that the tax credits are going down dramatically. If you look on a graph, it's a pretty steep downward curve. But they're against the very vehicle that was put in place that created the problem that they started. So it has nothing to do with whether we can look at tax credits or not. It has to do with the fact that the people that are arguing in favor of tax credits, I do not include Representative Rice in this, really not a lot of people in the House at this time, are arguing against something that just doesn't make sense.
All right. Thank you, Senator Kelly and Representative Edgman. This is Talk of Alaska. We're going to go to the phones now. And Jim is in Eagle River. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Senator Kelly, I'm glad that everyone finally has concluded that cutting expenditures in itself is not enough. All last year, I heard every Republican representative I contacted said we need to cut first, and kind of ignoring the need for additional revenues. Now, it seems the only additional revenue I've heard talk about was the having the permanent fund earnings, which was really the only option left to Governor Walker. If you look at that as taking something away from every Alaskan, that's kind of a regressive tax in itself if you're talking about hurting the economy. But my question is, what additional revenue sources, such as an income tax, realistically would the Republican Senate be willing to support in order to bridge this budget deficit?
Thanks,
well,
Jim.
First of all, what you said, you kind of had the answer to your own question in the first part of the question, which was you said that the Republicans were saying only to cut, or you had only heard that the Republicans were saying to cut. But then when you talked to them, they were saying cut first. So in fact, we were considering other revenue measures in light of the cuts that needed to take place. And so we've never said in my time here, we've never said that cuts are the only answer. That's been pretty consistent. I'm sure there's a few of the Republicans who have maybe said that, but not many. Second of all, the Senate kind of put its money where its mouth was, and the House didn't. We actually passed a bill, SB 128, that would have taken care of 88% of the problem. And so we were considering revenues along with the cuts that we had already installed. We're looking at more cuts this year in addition to further revenue measures, and we'll probably pass it as quickly as we did last year. And then get on with the discussion. The other thing is that we're not taking money out of the economy. We're not taking people away money from people in any regressive way, because the plan now is to pay at or above the average of the dividend going forward. The governor, when he vetoed that $1,000, that wasn't taking $1,000 out of the economy, because the dividend it rarely pays at $2,000. It pays somewhere around $1,100. And we're the conversation that I'm involved in, we're looking at actually paying a higher dividend than that.
All right. Thanks for the question, Jim. We're going to stay with the phones for a moment. Tom is in Anchorage. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Senator Kelly and Representative Edgman, I'd like to make a suggestion that instead of taking a chunk or a big chunk of the permanent fund dividend, that we employ one tax that has never been used, is one of the few taxes found in the U.S. Constitution, and that is the per capitation tax. This is an equal tax. That is, every individual pays the same amount. And it wouldn't apply just to Alaskans or to Alaskan children like the permanent fund dividend take does, the first tax ever of just children directly in the history of the world, as far as I know. It would include tourists that are here more than 3 days, soldiers, oil field workers, really everybody who isn't in Alaska because of an emergency, like one of those airlines that has to land at Cold Bay for a few days. You'd get an ID card, nice picture ID, a couple hundred dollars from everybody for a couple years even, not just every year, would raise $300-400 million. And as is equal, you might even reduce half of it from a truly progressive state of Alaska income tax, a little bit of a deduction for being an Alaskan. Whereas tourists and outsiders who pay taxes elsewhere would pay the full amount, without any kind of write-off. But a per capitation tax is really one of those unused things that can raise real, not to solve our problem, but make a real dent in the problem. Coupled with an income tax and a few other things, it could really lead to not taking our permanent fund dividend. I'd like to follow up if there are some comments.
All right. Thanks, Tom, for the question. Senator Kelly or Representative Edgemon, what do you think about this suggestion?
Well, this is Representative Edgemon. I think I would touch on one point that the caller brought in that's particularly important, and that is the fact that Alaska does have a lot of non-resident workers, a lot of seasonal workers that come into the state, and any broad-based measure that the legislature might pass should focus on that element. Now, an income tax, which many are talking about, and by the way, isn't it just, you know, a year later than last year after we went through these protracted special sessions, the conversation now is opening up to where people are acknowledging that we do have to make some really difficult choices about new revenue measures. So back to the something like the income tax or sales tax or what the caller suggested, I think it should be structured so that Alaskans alone aren't paying the bill. And what was suggested is something new. I hadn't heard that before, but I'd like to bring that back to our Finance Committee and take a closer look at it. And again, I appreciate the input and the willingness of the caller to touch on the reality of the time that we're in now.
Senator Kelly, any comments?
Well, actually, the per capita tax, I agree with Representative Bryce, Representative Edgemon. We haven't looked at that yet, as far as I know. And the Senate Finance Committee is looking at all options. There is a tendency to support or not support one or the other. But the fact is that the Senate is looking at all options, and I think that's probably a good one to look at. I think you're going to run into some constitutional problems with that tax, as you explained it. But those things would be discussed in committee. The other thing to keep in mind is that we do pay out a check, and to reduce that check is probably a lot easier, a per capita tax or an income tax, anything like that. If you do it in that manner, you're going to have to stand up a government agency. It's going to take a few years to actually get that in place, and it's going to be a significantly big bill to pay for a department to do tax collections. Those are just some of the negatives that I see, but those would be discussed in Senate Finance.
An email question came in. One of them, this is Beverly suggesting two ideas for taxation. She wants to know, why has the legalization and taxation of gambling not been considered or discussed as a viable revenue stream? People in Alaska can already gamble online. Alaska gains no revenue from this. And her second question is, why is there no discussion of a corporate tax? Who wants to tackle that?
Well, we already pay a corporate tax. Corporate income tax actually exists. The tax on gambling, that hasn't risen to a high level of discussion, and I'm not exactly sure why. Don't have a good answer for you that, but I know that was discussed in years past, and the idea of like a state lottery or something has been rejected a couple of times. We have not discussed that at length in the last couple sessions that I'm aware of.
I would just jump in, Lori, and say that on the corporate tax end of things, that the governor is proposing a change to the tax rate. Representative Guerra has legislation on that subject as well. And, you know, the gambling tax, whenever you're talking about instituting a new tax, you're talking about ways to collect it, to enforce it, to have an appeals process, additional staff in the Department of Revenue, like the Senate President just alluded, you know, how much money does it actually raise? Is the cost worth the benefit and so on? And but again, we're at a time where we're looking at virtually everything. This may get into the mix at some point.
Well, and I want to be clear that what Beverly was suggesting in a corporate tax was out-of-state contractors. She says, why are we worried about creating jobs when the money we invest in them leaves the state without benefiting the citizens who paid for those jobs? And why aren't we examining what we tax canneries and the seafood industry, trophy and out-of-state hunting licenses? So she was talking about other types of corporate taxes.
Well, and I think what we were just both trying to say, perhaps in different ways, is that a corporate tax structure is already in place, that a Trident Seafoods or ConocoPhillips or any vendors that don't sort of headquarter in Alaska, or at least not permanently, would have to pay. So that is already in place, and I think tacking on to that or readjusting you know, those rates are under consideration.
All right. Thanks so much for that. Let's go back to the phones. But before we do, I want to ask this question about the cuts that have been made. And we've seen reductions in state jobs. There's been hundreds of millions of dollars cut. What's your best understanding of how your decisions about the state government budget will affect Alaska's overall economy? In other words, how will you know when you get to the cut in spending that satisfies those calling for more budget reductions before looking for new taxes without imploding the economy? Senator Kelly, you want to start?
Well, imploding the economy, first of all, that could be a possible outcome from cutting too much. I don't argue with you on that. But the implosion of the economy is going to show up first in the private sector, and we're seeing that right now. So we just have to be very careful that we don't draw from the private sector even more, as it is suffering significant layoffs to keep government afloat at the current level of government. The fact is that we have cut significantly from the budget, no question about it, about $1.2 billion over the last 2 years, and probably $700 million of that has come from the operating budget, and we're down to a pretty bare minimum capital budget right now. To suggest that maybe there's a magic number, there really isn't a magic number to say, oh, we've cut enough, now we can stop. But we do have to be very careful as we proceed from this point on. I think we took a lot of fat out of government. There's no question about it, because most of the reductions that we made did not result in layoffs, and that's not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. The loss of a job, whether it's private or government, is a tragedy, and that's not what we're looking for. But we did cut significant amounts from the operating budget and really didn't see any layoffs. We drilled down into this last year with the Office of Management and Budget, and we got to a number of layoffs that actually happened, and it was about 37. That number's higher now, but what they're talking about are jobs that are gone from attrition, positions that were not filled, and then they cut the positions out. So when you hear about significant reductions in government, they really haven't happened at any kind of damaging rate at this point. That doesn't mean that we can just charge ahead and slash and cut without regard to the workforce that is in place now. So I guess the short kind of answer to this is there is no magic number. We have to proceed carefully because we don't want to do damage to the economy. We currently have cut a lot from government and did not see significant layoffs. There have been difficulty in delivering some services, but we haven't seen a lot of layoffs now. And furthermore, the private sector is in recession, and to suggest that we should pull money from the private sector to keep government afloat is not the path that the Senate wants to go down.
Representative Edgman, would you like to comment on this concept of when is it enough without imploding the economy?
Well, that's the very difficult balance that we're trying to achieve. You know, if you look at reductions, just looking at the sheer numbers starting from last year, 2016, and these come from the Department of Labor, We're looking at about 2,800 jobs in the oil industry that have gone away, about 1,500 jobs in the construction industry, about 1,300 in state government. And I think Senator Kelly sort of put a finer point on it, because some of those jobs have gone away, but they're not actual layoffs that that might have been incurred by the state agencies. But also, you look at the capital budget. You know, for the first time since I think calendar year 1999, we've got a state budget in terms of the actual capital budget, in terms of the state contribution, that's below $120 million. So that's money that goes into the economy and makes a big difference as well. And the Institute of Social and Economic Research and others have done analysis on the impacts of instituting a broad-based tax, cutting the permanent fund dividend, cutting jobs, and all of the above. And I think their conclusion is they all hurt the economy. Everybody pays a price. Cutting jobs at the state level, I think, is probably at the top of that list in terms of overall economic impact. So it's very difficult, all of it.
Yeah. Speaker Bryce brings up a good point there, and that is the capital budget. That has been cut to a point that we are we have to look at that again, because what always suffers when you have a low capital budget, besides construction industry, is your maintenance. And the state has accrued a deferred maintenance debt that's pretty serious. It's gonna bite us in the rear end here in the future, and we're gonna have to address that. The only way you can do it with money, and we're gonna have to find a way to create some revenues to take care of a capital budget.
All right. Well, thank you to Senate President Pete Kelly and House Speaker Bryce Edgman. We are discussing the state budget and the plan for the future, and we'll take more calls and questions as Talk of Alaska continues statewide after this short break.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Anchorage and Fairbanks to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. As it turns out, you don't need to wear a cape to save the community or a giant S on your chest to stand up for what's right. That's because the University of Alaska is working to build a better future for our state. Through education, the university is developing a skilled workforce with more teachers, engineers, and nurses to move Alaska forward. Join the university in leading the change Alaska needs. Visit drivechangeak.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. We're talking about the state budget. And the guests today are Senate President Pete Kelly and House Speaker Bryce Edgman. They are joining us from KTOO in Juneau. I want to go to an email question now. This is from Rich in Sitka. And he's wondering about a state income tax and how that may help the economy. He says the state needs the money to operate, and further cuts can strongly hurt the economy. We were just talking about some of that. Ferry cuts, he says, have already had an impact on Sitka's economy. An income tax would bring in new money from outside the state by taxing non-resident workers. He says further, the feds allow deductions for state income taxes. That means feds pay for 20% of state income tax, which in effect brings more federal money into the economy. He wants to know if this is growing the economy or if he has missed something somewhere. What are your thoughts about that, Senator Kelly?
Well, I think I've already made it fairly clear that the Senate has a number of reasons not to go down the income tax path. It doesn't mean we're not going to look at it, and it doesn't mean that there aren't some benefits to it. But by and large, it costs a lot of money to institute. It won't be implemented for a long time, relative to the problem that faces us. It takes money from the private sector that is already in recession, and it will be used to grow a government or sustain a government that most of us in the state believe is probably too big. Doesn't mean it's horribly bloated, but we are taking the position in the Senate that if you just institute taxes pulling from the private sector, to give it to the government without some additional cuts, all you're doing is asking the private sector to support a government that is inefficient. Second of all, when compared to the alternative of a paying a dividend at or above the average that we've always gotten and using a portion of that stream from the earnings reserve to fund government is a far more elegant solution because it can happen immediately without any cost to the state. And it doesn't just go at the private sector economy, or mostly at the private sector economy.
And what would you say to folks who say a dividend cut is, in effect, a regressive tax on lower income people? It doesn't affect people at the high income level as much as it does folks on the lower end of the economic ladder. And an income tax would be less of a burden for low income folks.
Because the Senate plan is to pay at or above the average that we've always gotten for the dividend, so you're really not taking anything out of the economy that was currently there. It's just saying we're gonna average this thing. We're gonna pay a little bit higher than that, and it's really not a tax in that respect at all.
Well, we have another comment, email comment, saying adjusted for inflation, $1,000 is lower than almost all previous PFDs, and he's advocating to stop saying it's an average.
I'm not talking necessarily about $1,000.
All right. Representative Edgemond, did you want to respond to this idea of how much an income tax may actually help out the state's economy?
Well, I liked how the caller framed the question. He talked about something that was important to him and his community, the ferry service, and then he talked about a revenue measure that we may need to put in place in order to pay for that service. And, you know, nobody likes talking about taxes. None of us in the legislature like the notion of having to put taxes forward. But we're at a point where we're down to about 1 year's worth of savings, about $3.5 billion in our primary savings account. We've been drawing down on those savings for 5 years. We're now into our sixth year. And we're at a point where if we want to continue providing ferry service, if we want to keep the public school open, if we want to keep the trooper on the beat, if we want to keep the roads plowed and maintained, we have to look at ways to pay for it. And an income tax, I think, is attractive at least to some, and I know in my district it surely is. It's attractive because it does get at non-residents. I think some 20-21% of the overall amount would be paid by people who don't live in Alaska. And then you also have the element, as was brought out, about being able to deduct it from your federal income taxes. A sales tax, again, from a smaller community perspective, my hometown of Dillingham already pays a 6 cents sales tax. You go out and you spend a dollar, you pay 6 cents more on top of that to walk out of the store. That's more problematic for me and for a lot of other smaller communities around the state. I think the debate that ensues here in the next several months is going to probably look at things from a comparative analysis standpoint, and we're going to come up with something that works as best as we can make it work.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Rich is in Fairbanks. Hi, Rich.
Hi, thank you. And I just want to thank the legislators for the time and the effort to do this. It's very timely and very necessary. There has been a common phrase that I've heard very many times that taxes are the price we pay for civilization. And that's the premise of what I'm calling about. I want both of the legislators to respond to that. But I also want to inject that I recently participated in a survey that the Senate majority put out, and it had over 7,000 respondents. And it my recollection, I got the results sent to me as part of the participation, and my understanding was that people really came out pretty much in favor of an income tax. And so it's astonishing to me that Senator Kelly can still maintain that this is such a bad idea. I mean, tax me. For God's sake, it's time. We've had a tax in the past. It doesn't break us. All the arguments have been put forward in these calls you've already had. Let's do an income tax. It's inevitable, and we should stop beating around the bush. Thank you. I'll hang up.
All right. Thanks, Rich. We've been talking about income taxes, and it would not, of course, solve the budget problem. But it does seem, as and both of you have noted, that people are coming around to the idea that changes will have to be made. And some of those might include a tax. Did you want to follow up on comments, or should we move forward?
We've talked quite a bit about what his statement was.
And Representative Edgman, anything to add, or should we move on to other things?
No, nothing to add at this point.
All right. Well, one of the questions that we had by email was actually one about spending money. It says, this is from Mark, and it says a 2012 report showed huge potential savings by investing in energy efficiency improvements in state and other municipal buildings. Senator Kelly, you mentioned deferred maintenance. What about plans to invest as you're maintaining buildings and making sure that facilities are safe and fitted for the future? Is there a part of that plan, is that energy efficiency improvements?
Well, yeah, I think it would be. And I think another thing that most people, that's been lost in the discussion about the capital budget, is that over the years we have voted to build buildings and different facilities. And then we failed to do something which I think would have suited us very well, and that's to put some money in that original capital appropriation for the ongoing maintenance of that building. They should be built more energy efficient. There's no question about that, and there will be savings from that. But we need to invest in the maintenance of those buildings at the outset. I am very concerned about the lack of a capital budget, and that's one of the reasons why I want a fiscal solution. The big thing that we disagree over here, I think, from many of the callers that have called in, is the callers want an income tax. And most of the people in the Senate are saying, you know, it doesn't make sense to send out a check and then tax people. It's just a far more easy solution. It gives us the money we need so that we can move on to things like energy efficiency and maintenance and a lot of things that we need to do that are just good management in state government. But we're not at the point right now. We're not at the discussion necessarily of good management because we have such a large problem that faces us. And we have to fix that problem before we can get into some of the things like how do you put in place an energy efficiency program or a maintenance program or something like that.
Well, kind of somewhat along those lines, because I'm going to get to a question about infrastructure. Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott have said they're working on a climate change framework, perhaps an administrative order directing agencies to plan for climate impacts, which they hope to release sometime this spring. Representative Andy Josephson of Anchorage plans to introduce legislation on climate change. This isn't an issue the legislature has tackled in recent sessions. Do we need to do more in that regard, especially in planning for environmental change that may impact infrastructure?
Well, this is Representative Edgman. I would say we absolutely need to do more. When you look at the changes that are happening all around Alaska, coastal erosion being one of those big sort of sleeper issues that, you know, nearly every community in Alaska to some degree is experiencing, everything from communities like Shaktulik and Kivalina and Nutok on the coast to interior communities that are by a water body. The issue of ocean acidification is another issue that is coming upon us, whether we like it or not. The fact that we have just in terms of commercial and residential facilities, over $1 billion worth of infrastructure built on changing ground conditions, permafrost. So it's something that we do need to look more into. The United States is concluding its chairmanship of the Arctic Council in April. I wish the last couple of years we'd have made this more of a focal point. We didn't. But at the legislative level, again, it's sort of like the fiscal challenge in front of us. I think the problem is here to stay, and we have to confront it and recognize that we need to do something about it.
Senator Kelly?
You know, I think the Arctic Policy Council is a great venue to discuss these issues, and Alaska has a prominent seat in that council. I'm actually lucky this year I get to serve on that. There's a lot of science that's still not settled on this. I know a few years ago they were talking about consensus that there is global warming or climate change. Science is more about evidence and not necessarily about consensus. And I think we need to proceed cautiously so that people won't play mischief mischief within huge federal funds that are being contemplated here for the climate change issue. But I think it's good for Alaska to be on that Arctic Council, to play an active role in that council, to discuss such issues as we're talking about, ocean acidification and erosion, permafrost. Those are all very important issues to us, and we need to be in the discussion.
When the word consensus is used, is it not consensus about the evidence on climate change?
Yeah, I've seen mostly it's consensus about politics, not science.
Well, getting back for a moment to the capital budget concerns and construction, the Homer News reported that the Alaska Construction Academies in the governor's budget seeks to cut another $600,000 from this program for carpenters, plumbers, electricians. It would bring it down from $3.4 million in funding in 2015 to 1.2. And granted, there is this downward trend that we're discussing in construction projects. But is it more expensive to bring these programs back if and when the economy recovers? And should we be spending more for incentives for other areas instead of carpenters? Should the state invest in the tech industry?
Oh, this is all the perfect storm of running out of money but still having needs that are out there that are unmet. And you hate to see programs like you just talked about in the Department of Labor having to be cut and sort of going away, because oftentimes, and I'm sure Senator Kelly can talk with more authority on this than I, but take the university, for example. When you lose talent, sometimes you don't get it back. And I'm not saying that that's the case with, things at the vocational education level. But we do run the risk of not being able to continue to invest in things that need to make Alaska the great state that it is going down the road, given we do have a population that still is increasing. We still have a lot of needs. We talked about energy a moment ago. We still have a lot of needs, really. And again, I'll put my rural hat back on, a lot of things that are not met out in the smaller communities, even with the budgets that we had at the peak of the 2000s. So absolutely tough decisions, and I think it's a great question.
Well, I think I agree with Representative Bryce on I keep calling you Representative Bryce. I used to work with Tom Bryce, who was a representative from Fairbanks, Representative Edgman. And it kind of punctuates the need for a capital budget. You have to train people for jobs around the state in multiple disciplines, but you have to have a place for them to work after you've trained them. And a capital budget is one of those perfect things. If you've got a construction industry going in this state that's building the infrastructure of this state, the people that are being trained have some hope that there will be a job here. Another thing, one of the reasons why I think a budget regarding maintenance is so important is those are the small jobs that keep your contractors going year to year between construction season. You don't generally have big outside contractors bidding on maintenance jobs either. That suits your local hire quite well to do to have maintenance jobs. That's one of the reasons I'm so concerned that we do have a fiscal solution is we've got to have somewhat of a steady capital budget, not because only because our infrastructure needs need to be met, but because our workforce has to have a place to land after we train them.
All right. Thank you, Senator Kelly, Representative Edgman. We're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we'll take more questions as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Let's go right to the phones. Don is in Fairbanks. We'll try to squeeze a couple more questions in here in the last few minutes of the program. Hi, Don.
Hi. I got you on speakerphone at this end because I've kind of run around doing stuff. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I don't think the legislature and the people who are doing the investing right now have a handle on things, and I wonder if they realize where non-traditional investing is being done by PERS, TERS, permanent funds, and everything, including the Mental Health Trust, because there's a lot of money that's going into investments, non-traditional ones, that is non-stock and bonds. I was a broker for 12 years, and then I have a vested interest, I should say, in TERS because I was a teacher for 23 years here in Fairbanks. But are they aware of all the percentages of non-traditional investments? Because I've got farmland down in California, and they're going to lose some big-time money in the not-too-distant future.
Representative Edgman or Senator Kelly, I'm not exactly sure what Don's question is, but maybe you want to take a stab at this?
Well, I think the best way to respond to that, and time is short here, would be for the caller who has particular expertise in this area to contact folks at the Department of Revenue, because the discussion itself is very complicated, and we could break it down from the permanent fund to the pension board to all these separate investments that are made that all have different investment goals.
You know, I recognize the caller, and he actually taught my wife. I love this state; it's such a small town. Don, I'm having a little difficulty with your question. Let me just talk a little bit about PERS TERS, though. And 2 years ago, the legislature passed a bill. It's actually now the three sessions ago. The legislature passed a bill to invest $3 billion into the PERS TERS system, which is paid us great dividends. It's resulted in savings of $90 million per year. Actually, this year is about $60 million, and should make that fund healthy going into the future. I think, however, we probably need to do something like that again here at a time when we're short on money. We may have to bolster that system again, and there will be hearings in Senate Finance starting up sometime, I would say within the next month or so. Towards that end.
All right, let's stay with the phones for a moment. John is in Fairbanks. Hi, John. Do you have a question quickly?
Yeah, this is John Davies. Hello.
Hello, John. How are you doing?
I just wanted to make a slight correction, clarification with respect to job loss. As you know, I have a Regent hat. The university has removed 900 positions from its budget over the last couple of years. And of those, 300 are actual layoffs. So there's 300 people that have lost their jobs at the university system. And as was alluded earlier by Representative Edgman, this is particularly problematic because at the university we start to get an exodus of talent that results from that. So I hope that we keep that in mind, that there have been significant layoffs. And secondly, I do want to commend Senator Kelly for looking at the maintenance issues. We on the Regents have thought that that was a significant problem. I've led a challenge there to redirect operating money into our annual maintenance budget. So we are building that up annually, but we need some more help from the legislature on deferred maintenance. So thanks for that.
Thanks for the call, John.
If I could address that, this is Senator Kelly. First of all, John Davies is for those of your listeners who are not living in Fairbanks, John was a standout legislator for many years. From Fairbanks. John, what you say about the university is so true. It literally causes me to break out in a little bit of a sweat when I think of the maintenance problems that are going on at the university. And thanks for noting that issue about the layoffs at the university. The data that I was referring to was through the Office of Management and Budget, and it just had to do with the administration. And it was before, I think, some of these significant layoffs came about at the university.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, John, and the reminder that there are real people that are impacted by cuts, not just empty positions. Let's stay with the phones just for one last quick call. Don is in Fairbanks. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Quickly, your question, Hello? Please.
Am I on?
Yes. Do you have a question, please? We only have a couple minutes.
We can cut and save, but there's so much of the revenue that the off the federal lands in Prudhoe Bay that we could be getting revenue off of. Mark Begich had six ideas there on how to get revenue that the other states get off federal lands that we don't. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you for the suggestion, and all I would say is I'll bring it up at our next leadership meeting and see if there's something we can pursue from the Begich ideas when he was in the Senate.
All right. I want to get back to one question related to climate change again. Communities like Newtok, Shishmaref, Kivalina, residents in Newtok say they just have a few years before they'll have to abandon their village. Arguably, it's already uninhabitable. It's been more than a decade of planning, trying to piece together federal funding. Even against the backdrop of the fiscal crisis, is it time for the state to take definitive action?
Well, in a situation like Newtok, and I represented Newtok a couple of years ago, you have no choice. You have to take definitive action because the community is literally washing away. And my recollection very quickly here is that the amount of state agencies and federal agencies that are involved are it's mind-bending. It's almost a cottage industry in itself just to keep a track of all the bureaucracy that's involved with the different funding sources and those that have oversight over the move of a community, which is everything from the school, the utility, to the airport, to roads, to homes, and you name it. But again, I'll go back to my comment that coastal erosion is a sleeper issue in Alaska, and it's only going to get more prevalent over time.
Senator Kelly, in the final moment.
You know, I just support what Representative Edgemon just said. He's from that area. He speaks definitively on it.
And so does that mean that the state needs to take more action in helping these communities?
You know, we have a lot. Again, it goes back to that capital budget. Most of the things that are going to deal with a coastal erosion are going to come through a capital budget, and that's one of the biggest things we're struggling with right now.
All right. Thank you so much to Senate President Republican Pete Kelly from Fairbanks and House Speaker Democrat Bryce Edgemon from Dillingham for being on the line today in this very, very busy time. Thank you for joining us, Alaskans. And you can tune in next week for Talk of Alaska. We'll be discussing the Day of Remembrance. Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Subsistence Regional Advisory Council is meeting in Bethel February 15th and 16th at the AVCP Housing Authority Conference Room from 9 to 5 to develop proposals to change federal subsistence wildlife and trapping regulations for the 2018 to 2020 regulatory years and discuss other issues related to subsistence. The public is encouraged to participate either in person or by teleconference. For all the information about the meetings, go online to doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. Contact the Office of Subsistence Management to receive meeting documents or to request special accommodation needs by 7 business days prior to the meeting. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.